Greetings and salutations from the Agile Revolution podcast. I'm Tony.
I'm Craig.
And I'm Renee.
And we're doing it live with Agile Brisbane, Tony.
Live at Agile Brisbane. So this is our first virtual podcast. So we're actually recording this through Zoom as well. And wonderful to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think this will be the first time we've done it live on video too.
I do believe that is the case. We tend to like to hide away like mushrooms.
Yeah, so you get
two bald heads.
Yeah, looking at Tony and I, that's why we have faces for radio, isn't it, Tony?
There's Absolutely. It all.
So I guess, you know, Tony, what's our topic here tonight? What are we here to talk about?
Well, I think, you know, we're going to take some topics from the people that are around us, but we really thought, you know, that we don't want to waste a good pandemic, so to speak, and let's have a chat about how companies, how organizations are coping with the remote working. I think it's a fairly poignant topic at this moment in time, and we're all dealing with it. A lot of people on here will be working through it, so let's have a chat around that.
Absolutely. So, Renee, what are you seeing right at this point in time in the community?
I think naturally, because I am working at a consulting company, we're seeing some of the more bigger trends coming through. I think, you know, we've thought about it in terms of, look, there's an immediate response that a lot of organisations had to make, which is dealing with, you know, ensuring that their people are safe, you know, dealing with getting people back home, but also ensuring that the people are able and equipped to work remotely as well. I think, you know, the time has passed where almost all companies have sort of fought that particular problem. But they're now waiting and starting to look at how they respond to the environment and how it's changing on a daily and a weekly basis, and getting ready for whenever this is going to stop and what their strategy is going to do. So a lot of organizations are shifting their strategy, as you would expect. Some are keeping the same, but they're executing it all as much as they can virtually or distributed. But there are a number of organizations that are looking to digital in a more stronger way than they previously have before. And as you would unfortunately expect, a number of them are looking at having to reduce cost out of their business in order to keep afloat to last through this hibernation period that we're all in.
Yeah, I think I was going to say one of the things, all really good points which I want to dig into. I think the first thing that was interesting to me was the speed at which some organisations could or couldn't actually move to a work from home environment. Obviously, there's lots of jobs in our world that require people to be on site, and, you know, a huge shout out to those who are on the front line keeping things running. But when we talk about a lot of the areas that we all work in as Agile coaches, a lot of the industries we work in that back office knowledge work, how quickly some organizations could respond to that and actually work in a virtual manner was very interesting. What did you see around that, Tony? Was there a bit of a mixed bag?
I think there was definitely a mixed bag. I mean, there are organizations who obviously they do the remote work as it is and they just scale it up. Right? We saw that. However, I think what they weren't prepared for was the nuances that come with remote working at scale. And you're seeing even the simplest things that we would normally take for granted not being done or causing them problems. Their infrastructure is suffering. We see, you know, take the schooling effects, you know, people's OneNote dropping out, those types of things. So it's been an interesting ride. And I think for me, I've been, you know, in a few companies and doing presentations, and it's just thinking through how you actually interact now, because remote just amplifies everything that you would do when you actually interact with people. Even from a facilitation point, you can't just rock up and do what you used to do. You actually have to plan out and think what you're going to do before you actually get there, and that's really interesting for leaders as well.
Yeah, and I thought it was very interesting to to see organizations that, for example, you know, didn't have like a fleet of laptops. Organizations who I've been in previously who have always argued that, oh no, we're going to put desktops because we don't trust the employees to you know, to be able to take that equipment home, that, you know, had to shuffle, or, you know, very complicated standing operating, you know, environments that couldn't even, you know, connect to, you know, Wi-Fi outside the office. It's been interesting to see how people have had to deal with that. And I guess I've seen a lot of organizations where decisions that would normally take, you know, days, weeks, months to make, you know, were able to be made just like that because, you know, we absolutely had to make quick decisions.
Yeah, it is always heartening for me to see very bureaucratic organizations able to make extremely quick decisions when they know there's a crisis. And I only wish that organizations were, you know, able to take a step back whilst this is on and think, how could we do more of this style of management more commonly than having to go back to our bureaucratic ways?
Yeah. I guess, how do they get, do we go back? You know, I saw a very poignant post from a friend of mine who said, you know, once upon a time it was agile teams, now all teams are agile. And is that going to change? How do we go back from that now? And what are the precipices of that? And I see there's some questions, John.
Yeah, I just wanted to, I was sort of seeing that. So I wanted to bring Patrick in, Patrick Fernando, into the conversation. Do you have some observations, Patrick? You want to share that with us?
Yeah, one of the observations that we had, I'm working with an agile coach based in Sydney with our companies, that observations that we have was conversations tend to be more asynchronous now with video conferencing. And it's causing quite a level of discomfort on the participants versus when you compare it to face-to-face, right? Right, and you can just throw things around very quickly. And this one, you know, just a single disruption tends to amplify a level of discomfort that the team is, that the participants have when you're doing like virtual or video conferencing.
And this is often, you know, prior to the whole COVID crisis, why a lot of agile folk, you know, so significantly aren't encouragers of distributed working, is because it does create that asynchronous communication. And it's really, we're just going to have to deal with it in this world. But, you know, I think there are probably some techniques, and I see a lot of organisations probably aren't using the right tools to deal with this as well. So, for example, you know, all of them are using VC, yeah, sure, but how many of them are actually using continuous voice over IP-based platforms like Discord and so forth? So they're not actually enabling this continuous environment of being able to communicate as a team as well.
Yeah, I think I'm seeing the two ends of that spectrum as well. I'm seeing them go to the far end of the left, and, you know, they're just jumping in and grabbing whatever tools, and they're not actually the tools that suit the job. So a lot of the organisations I'm talking to, and any advice I could give anyone here today, is the way I look at it when I set remotes, and I've had a fair bit of experience working on some big programs that were spread across continents. So the first thing is, don't go to the tools straight away. Start with the people. Start with the planning and the facilitation, and model the outcomes of the things that you want to actually do, and then choose those tools that actually match that, and you'll get a better result. I think, to Patrick's point, some of that interruptive stuff that's happening, there are methods to think about there, because you need to think about more about the social styles of the people that you're dealing with. Yeah. So how in that social style thing, you know, there's a couple of layers of that. There's, you know, people are seeing people doing, people hearing people. So you've got to cater to that, because that starts to disrupt. And then it's actually, you know, introverts, extroverts, and thinking about, how do I manage those conversations, you know, using those closed questions to control the tempo of the conversation with your extroverts, because that creates space for your introverts to come in, and then using opening questions to pull them in. It seems like sensible stuff. It seems like stuff that we would normally do when we facilitate, but when you get online, people forget that stuff.
Yeah, that's right. And it's, again, if you know, if people, like in video conferencing, you know, usually even seeing someone's faces, we're putting it as an optional it's an optional approach, given that not everyone wants their face seen. And, you know, sometimes it gives a level of, I guess it also gives up a level of stress when you're seeing yourself in video. So we're still trying to, I guess, navigate through that phase, I guess.
I love that optional video idea as an introvert itself. Like, this is odd for me to have my video on. I don't normally do it. And the other reason being, I have a lot of calls at 7 a.m. and 11 p.m. There is no reason you want to see me at that time.
Go on, Tony. That left it open for you, Tony.
I was being nice.
Thank you, Tony.
Go, John.
There's also a question from Nan as well. So he's asking about when we get back to the office, there might be more demand from staff to work from home. So his question is, how do you think organizations will respond and what drawbacks do you see for the staff? I'll unmute Nan.
He's already unmuted.
There we go. He is.
There might be some people who want to take, you know, a few days a week to work from home, and some organizations might be accepting of that, but some might just go back to the old way and say, no, look, everyone has to be in the office. But I think there's also potential drawbacks for staff. So I'm curious to know your perspective around how you think organizations will respond and the drawbacks that staff could experience.
I'll let you go first, Craig.
I guess that's an interesting one. So thanks for the question. I think you've probably heard this said a lot already because I've read it a lot, but I think it's very true, is that this is an experiment that we didn't see coming, but for a lot of us it is an experiment that we're playing out. And I think a lot of what we're learning now and what we'll learn over the coming weeks will actually help to answer that question. I think the second part to that comes back a little bit to where Renee was going, and I want to bring that topic back in just a moment, is what is going to be those operating models for organisations as we move out of this. And I think that will go a long way to answering that question. But to sort of give you my viewpoint on this, this was happening anyway. There was more people working from home. There's been lots of reasons for that. We can go down the climate angle. We can go down the work-life balance angle. There's lots of angles you can take. I think what this has done is proven, and hopefully will prove, that you don't have to have your staff in front of you to work effectively. The challenge that brings for us as agile practitioners is then how do we, if we've assumed, for example, that everybody could stand in front of a wall that was made of sticky notes, how can we do that when we have some people in the office and some people not? And how can we make those tools more accessible? How can we make that data more visible? Which we haven't been probably terribly good at in the past anyway.
Yeah, I agree with you. And so for me, I often talk about the fact that organizations reach that organic point where through the way they've grown up around themselves, or they've restructured themselves, or they've damaged themselves, right? They reach a point where their connective collaborative tissues stop them from being able to communicate, and the information flow doesn't work properly up and down. And that's when, they get to the point where they need to actually do a considered design. And unfortunately, they don't. A lot of the times they just restructure and try to restructure themselves out of it. Why I say that is because this is, as you said, it's a nexus point, I think, is that organizations now are actually going to have to think about actually redesigning themselves in a considered method to enable the remote capability of working. And those things that actually become the norm are the things that we're doing now. And how do they take the good from that? And how do they amplify those things? Because you're exactly right. There's different things that we're going to need to do. You talk about a bay of rooms or that a capability of walls. And there's lots of digital things that we can use, but how do you use them in the best mode? Renee, I can see you're champing at the bit there.
No, it's just I agree with everything that you've said. I think realistically, there's a good chance that we're going to be in and out of lockdown across the world in every country in different times. So I agree that organisations will have to lean into an approach that can still deliver outcomes virtually. So I think it's unlikely we'll ever go back to where we were. I think there's probably realistically with a lot of theory X-style managers, so command and control managers, out there, they're probably dealing with this the hardest, and they will naturally try, and when we get back to normal, go back into a world of control and sort of push away from a more of a virtual environment? Because let's be honest, there's a lot less transparency right now. And I think there's also, in fairness right now, a lot more leniency around how long it's taking people to do work because of either not having the right tools or, in fairness, because people are still at home looking after their kids whilst they're also in parallel doing their work. I suspect what will happen is organisations will push quite quickly onto getting data and metrics, and they'll, as soon as they get those in place, they'll also start to push harder around efficiency gains associated with that.
I think that's where the agile community, the coaches ourselves, have a role to play to say, well, you know, you can get on the bandwagon of that data and try and make everybody efficient, but it's how do you work more effectively? You can be efficient and not work effectively, right? So it's also looking at measuring the right things. It's the old story, measuring the right things, the right data, and having that dynamic capability to pivot.
So I asked if anybody wanted to chime in to raise their hands, but nobody did. So I just went and unmuted Andy and David to see if they had something to add there. So David, Andy, do you...
Go ahead, David.
So, yeah, probably the thing that I've been observing at the moment is how you can structure your day. So typically 8 hours in an office, and it's like, well, actually... I don't actually need to do those 8 hours like that. I can actually find efficiency doing a couple hours here, a couple hours there. There's obviously a need to be hooked in with other people at certain points in time, but actually a lot of it almost gives, opens up some flexibility in terms of actually I can do a really intense bit of, you know, 30 minutes here, do something really valuable, and then walk away and go and hang out with my daughter or do something else. And actually in terms of outcome for an organization, I've delivered something really valuable, but I haven't needed to sit at a desk for 3-4 hours. I've just gone focused, bang, done, value.
I think that's a really good point. I mean, we're not just at home working from home. Before this whole thing, I would go home and I'd work from home and I'd have peace and quiet. I'd get a lot of stuff done. But now we're stuck at home with our kids, right? They're not in school, they're at home. Certainly my kids are expected to also go to school from home. So now I have, not only do I need to get my work done, get my 8 hours done, I also need to figure out all the technology of my kids. Everything that the schools are using to try and teach, which is almost a full-time job in itself. So it's what do you guys think? Are people becoming more flexible with work hours just because it's a necessity, and how will that impact on teams that are, you know, collaborating? Because now suddenly, well, I'm Slacking you, or I'm on Discord, but half the people are not there because they're trying to deal with their family, right? When we're trying to also get work done. What have you guys seen in that area?
Yeah, I just want to bring Patrick in because Patrick's got a good point on that.
Yeah, I have been echoing some sentiments from Esther Derby's tweets recently about this. The context at this point, we're in a crisis, it's completely different from the context that was before the crisis. So working from home before is not exactly the same as working from home now. As what Andy mentioned, you know, you have kids, you have your family with you. When you're working from home, back in the day, I guess, You're by yourself. Your wife is at somewhere else. Your kids are at school. But now everyone is with you. So the context has completely shifted.
Yeah. You're working at home. You know, I was lucky to the other morning to be on a conference with Esther, and chatting around some other stuff. You know, she made some very poignant points about, you know, you're having to come up with those thoughts, of those mechanisms about how we actually interact with each other. So I think, you know, it comes back to the team charters and having those working agreements about how you're going to work. So it's fine if from Dave's point of view, you go off to play with the daughter, but how do you tell people that you do that, right? So it's more a case of saying, well, I'm not available because I'm doing this. That's acceptable as long as people know when and where they can get you to the others.
You go, Renee.
I was also going to say, I think there's a real unacknowledged challenge here, especially around the comment that was made with looking after your children. I think, you know, I'm lucky one of my children is deep into her teenage years, so she's very self-sufficient, but any child that's 10 or under, for example, that's you're having to homeschool at home, I'm really concerned for those people because they have to not only, you know, they feel the pressure to do their job, they also have to keep their children going as well. They have to keep the household going as well, like cooking meals all the time because there's less takeout options and other and so forth. I see these people in particular most at risk because they wake up at 7 o'clock and they keep going till 11 o'clock at night. They've got no time for themselves.
Yeah, that was actually what I was going to sort of twist to as you jumped on in. So that's really good because you know, it was another thing that I heard the other day is, you know, actually working virtually doesn't take into account any time frame at all. You're virtually expected to be there because of the way we've worked on social media, the way we worked on Twitter, you're always available, right? But now you're working from home and you're digitally available. Everybody expects it to be exactly the same. And Craig and I are having a conversation about that this afternoon where both of us have made the mistake of burning ourselves to the ground. Craig?
Yeah, and all I was going to say is that I think taking all those points, I think I'm hoping that there will be a greater appreciation for that work-life balance so that, you know, we can actually do this more often, you know, if we go back to some sort of normal. But I think the thing that worries me is that we're at 3 or 4 weeks, depending on how long you've been in this thing. How long are people going to be able to sustain it? Because I think at the moment people are sustaining it, but I really hate to think that there's going to be, you know, some other you know, effects that we're going to learn as we move through this as well, which, you know, just people burning out because of what you just talked about. Thank you, Patrick, and thank you, everyone, for chiming on that and Noon for your questions, and for Andy and David for chiming in there. I wanted to sort of come back to your point, Renee, from earlier, because I think that's a really interesting point about what does the state of organisations and their operating models start to look like, because I suspect for some organizations they've started down this track, but you know, but for others it's just been reaction mode, and the real planning for what does, you know, the other side or even the current or the future look like is very interesting. So yeah, we'll expound that a little more about the types of things you're seeing, because the type of industries you're in, you probably see that more than some of us.
Yeah, I think you know, the quote that's being thrown around an awful lot by organisations is we need to be able to do not necessarily more with less, but same with less. So we need to cut costs. I think I am seeing already, you know, knowledge workers who are on contracts are significantly at risk. If they haven't been let go, a number of them are already in progress of being let go. And then I think the real risk in a lot of cases in some organisations is this, if we can't keep a whole pile of people on our books, they're getting rid of significant numbers of people inside of the organisation with an expectation that it's going to be really simple and easy to rehire again. So I think organisations are really underappreciating when they're making these decisions that there's going to be this huge swell of jobs on the market and a great opportunity for people to find a new job. So attracting is going to be extremely challenging, and getting people on board quickly is going to be extremely challenging with all of these prolonged recruitment phases that is likely going to be happening. And then lastly, with people, you know, they've lost a lot of their intellectual property through letting go of lots of people. So, you know, they're actually going to be way slower in the uptick as we come out of this as well.
Yeah, so I guess the question I've got is what, as an agile community, because a lot of that's happening at the executive level, and for some of us we might be playing in that space, but if we think to a lot of the people who are with us here in Agile Brisbane or listening to the podcast, what are the types of things that we can start to do and start to amplify as Agile coaches? What are your thoughts on that, Tony?
It's a really interesting one. You know, I'm talking with a number of leaders at the moment about, you know, how they do that redesign of their organization to take that into account, the sustainability. And I think that's what Renee's talking about there too, it's easy to cost it out. That's great. Short term, but sustainably the organization's going to suffer, right? So I think in terms of that, you're going to start looking at how you structure that organization around the digitality and the different roles that you're going to have in place now, because it's going to change the shape of the workforce. And I don't think the leaders and organizations that I've been talking to, they haven't really taken that into account. They've been thinking, well, we're just going to keep trundling on and it's going to be just a replication of what we do physically. But it actually changes it to not being what we do physically anymore. You know, we have to have the digital capability, but I use the word amplify all the time because it amplifies the need for different information flow. It amplifies the different need for those different connective collaborative tissues so that you can get the information to flow through the organization. And that's where we're thinking around the agility and the agile methods that we use. How do we actually supplant those into the digital ionosphere as well? Thoughts?
What are your thoughts, Craig?
Yeah, I think I alluded to some of the things before that. I think firstly, there's an element of, as agile practitioners, being mindful of what people are going through. So the same pace, dare I say velocity, but you know, let's use that word for a moment, are things that we need to be more mindful of in management. So if I bring that back to what I prefer to use, is that the outcomes may not be initially flowing as fast as they can, but I think this is really the opportunity to start really looking at the waste. You know, I mean, I've just looked at even some of my own you know, meetings, that the amount of the now Zoom meetings you get invited to and things that are overlapping or those type of things is actually starting to question and go, do I need to be at all those things? Where am I adding the most value? And with my, I guess, you know, coaching or Scrum Master hat on, you know, how can we have that continual check-in with the team to make sure that everybody is, you know, is part of it and flying through, you know, correctly? Tony?
I think the interesting thing is what we probably need to take into account here as well. And again, you know, I think Renee touched on it before. Leadership's trying to find its place in this as well. You know, make no mistake, they're going through the same things as we are because they had a specific style of leadership that probably worked, may have worked, may not have worked. But whatever it is, this change is going to amplify that for them in so many ways. I mean, agility, by the way, when we introduce an agility to an organization, it disseminates control. And then that leaves command and control levers, leaders only one lever to pull, and that's command, right? So you start hearing this, you must, you have to, you will, and the micromanagement. Now we move into this kind of environment, and this disseminates control even more and disseminates the ability to trust, right? Hopefully they do trust. So how do we help those that leadership understand that they need to be, I call it, in a shepherding mode, not a command mode. So shepherding, I use that term because shepherding is really about, you know, you're helping everybody to go the right direction, the direction of the organization. You're protecting them and you're looking after them, but you're not actually micromanaging every single one of them, right? I see somebody's got some questions there.
So yeah, I've just posted something. It's something that sort of crossed my mind over the last few days, that obviously with this whole working from home experiment is the opportunity to actually work for organizations that are not located in the city that you're currently in or even in the same country. And whether, I guess, opening up to the whole group, is anybody actually now thinking it would be really cool to go and work for this particular company that's based in Sydney or Melbourne or Auckland, or even, I guess, in your, if you don't mind working at night, maybe in Europe or the US or other things.
Well, I mean, I have that one happening absolutely right now. An organisation in Victoria that I may not have normally been able to work for, I'm able, the organization's able to do coaching with people who are in three different cities. Just before I came to this call, I was doing some work for an organization in Singapore. Renee, what are you seeing?
I think, I'm in a very similar boat. Even prior to all of this, I was actually working from home and doing silly odd hours. So most of my work was either in Europe or United States anyway. But I do think there's a greater appreciation, yes, to that context around it's starting to open up people's eyes. I think, the ability to get speakers in, for example, that they've never usually contacted, or it's been a lot more challenging to contact, is actually a lot easier these days as well.
And the negotiations now are not about whether you can get them in, it's about the appropriate overlap time, for example. I find myself negotiating all the time now. So, if somebody wants me to do a meetup in Scotland shortly, and it's negotiating them pushing their time back so that it's at least, reasonable time for me here. I see, is it Noonie? It's got a point to make there.
So just the question around lots of team members are reporting that their productivity is actually increased because they got less distractions. They are able to just pump out code, but collaboration is definitely suffering. So just interested in your perspective on do you see those two colliding in the short term, or can we ride this out until the crisis is done and not experience significant problems from that?
I wonder whether whether that is improving because people are actually more focused in the short amount of time they have, or whether it is that they're working longer hours. And I think that'll be the interesting statistic to figure out, and that comes back to the burnout thing I was talking about earlier.
Mm. It's not unsurprising that they would, as a software developer, that you'd be getting through more. I agree you'd have less interruptions, 100%. I do agree that the downside would always be collaboration, and you need to ensure that you're investing heavier inside of alignment, if possible, in order to mitigate some of that risk.
Yeah, I agree. I had that same question around the collaboration with a couple of companies I'm working with, and it's basically starting to instigate some of those things that we normally do as agilists, but we're actually ramping them up again. Use that amplification. Do we need to have a stand up three times a day? Sometimes that's the go, right? I'm not saying that's the right one, but there's an example. One company that I'm working with, we've gone to stand ups three times a day. Why? Well, because we've got workforce spread in different time zones in different areas, although now that the rest of the country's come back to the real time zone in Queensland, it's not so bad. But sorry, that's just for you, Renee. When you have that situation, sometimes, there's a stand-up in the morning to sync everybody up. There's a stand-up to make sure everybody's rocking and rolling and can talk to each other in the middle of the day. And there's one where you've got that sort of that shadow handover in the afternoon for the people that are coming in to take over from others. So, it's still the things we always did. We just have to think about how we can amplify those and use those to the best of our advantage.
John?
Yes, I was just thinking about Renee's points around the increased productivity and the reasons for that. And one reason I was thinking of is that when you are working in an office and you're struggling with a difficult problem and you're really wrestling with it, then it's obvious to the people around you that you're wrestling with that issue. But when you're working from home and you wrestle with an issue, you might spend 2 hours on it and then look back at it and say, I thought that should have taken 5 minutes. And then the thoughts are that the team's perception of what you've done is that you've only done 5 minutes worth of work. So you have to, in order to justify to yourself that you've really contributed as much to the team as you should be in order to hold up your end, then I think that people would put pressure on themselves to work harder to be able to have have that gravitas. That makes sense.
I definitely agree people do put pressure on themselves, 100%. I think, I haven't seen any evidence that people are expecting in a more severe way what people are doing. In fact, I've seen the opposite, that people are being a lot more compassionate around to what extent people are being able to deliver. I would argue in the normal context of an open office in particular, they are extremely distracting for software developers because at any point in time, someone can come up to you and interrupt you and you are just constantly context switched. And that's the part of the power of the ability to collaborate, but it's at the loss of flow for a software developer.
So I'm not talking so much about the impact of what the team is expecting from the individual, but more what the individual is expecting from themselves in terms of their own perception of their own contribution.
Yeah, I agree.
I think that even the team would be very compassionate towards them, but they might not be as compassionate towards themselves.
Yep, I agree.
Yeah, I want to bring in the question here from Gautami. Gautami, you want to ask we'll make your point there?
So what's happening with my company is, like you said, there's been like stand-ups 3 times a day. So we've been having multiple stand-ups and weekly meetings and everything. That's where you see the amount of time we spend on actually communicating, collaborating, and making sure everyone's across what we are doing and issues are discussed and the blockers are resolved. It actually affects the actual time you need to, like for coders, it's actually affecting the time they need to actually code and get the results out. So the testing, quality testing team can go ahead and do the testing. But actual time you need for productivity is decreasing, which we are expecting a trend that we might have to push some deadlines and make sure that, you know, we have that conversation with the clients where we can manage it from the our end. But how do you think this affects in long term if this possibly goes on for 6 months to be completely back on track?
Well, I guess the first thing I ask is, you know, some of the companies I've been working with where they've started to over collaborate, if there's any such thing. But the reality of it is they're doing too much, which is affecting the flow. And it's the old thing of a stand up, right? So let's just use stand up as an example because we all know that one. But does it have to be 35 minutes or 20 minutes? You know, how long are they, right? So, you know, I always
10 minutes,
teach,
Tony. 10 minutes.
Yeah, 10 minutes. I always teach the rule of three, right? You know, 3 questions, 3 dot points for each question. If it takes more than 3 sentences, take it offline. And that puts a lot of sharpness to it. Then people start to learn that this is really just about a sync up because it's actually syncing the people, not the actual technology, right?
Yeah, and right. I just want to bring Wei Yin into this one as well. Wei Yin, you had an observation there.
Sorry, Craig, I forgot what I've typed. I think it's more related to Renee's comment about interruption to software developers, because personally for me, I think it's not just the software developers that get interrupted in an open environment, and that's especially true when we are working on an agile and people think that it's easy to collaborate, but sometimes people forget that when someone is working in a flow of thoughts, just interrupting that person, it may still, you know, stop that person from, or distracting that person from finishing off the thoughts. And then when coming back, it's like, where was I?
kind of thing. You're 100% right. It's definitely knowledge workers in general. Yep.
Yeah, any form of knowledge work is what Patrick was just passing through there as well. I guess where I sort of want to take this now is, so we recognize all the things here, but what are the things we can start to do? You know, as we called this podcast and this meetup, is that we didn't want to waste a crisis, to kind of lend that Winston Churchill quote. I didn't want to say a good crisis because I'm not sure this has been a good thing, but you know, there are obviously lots of things that are not so good about it. There are a few things that you know that we gain, but let's not waste this. What can we do as an agile community now to start using this so that we can actually leave ourselves with a better you know, set of practices on the other side? What are your thoughts on that, Tony?
I think as an agile community, we actually have a lot of skills that are beneficial to making sure we get to the other side, that this is actually more the norm, right? I said it before, my good friend Phil Gudinski said, you know, that basically some teams used to be agile, right? But now all teams are agile. they just don't know how to operate in an agile mode, or they're struggling with the move to agility, right? And that is not just them, it's their organization. So all the skills that we possess, I think that we have it's an onus on us to start leaning in and offering those skills and helping people understand how they can work better and still use those modes to better the workforce. Renee?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think I've always thought about my purpose in life as being bringing humanity back to the business. And I think more than ever, this is a perfect opportunity for us to remain very empathetic and very connected with people and ensure that people are well supported throughout this process. Whilst at the same time looking for great opportunities to help teams become more efficient and effective as they work distributed.
Yeah, and I guess sort of pick up on those two points. You sort of said that making every team agile. I think, Tony, that might be correct from the point of view of working anywhere and you know, forcing some collaboration. But I am also seeing people fall back to old habits, because if you're not collaborating in the same space, you know, the fact is that I'll now slow down and take the time and you know, give me a couple of days and I'll come back to you on that, as opposed to what, you know, we would try to force, which is people actually collaborating in order to go faster. So in some cases I'm seeing that happen because people are suffering because someone isn't sitting beside them. But in the other case, I'm seeing exactly the opposite happen, where we actually fall back to old habits because someone's not sitting beside me. So it's a bit of both.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree. And I think that was the intent of what I was saying. So, and again, if we were to see that as agilists, how would we deal with that, right? How would we help them? And you look at the collective, some of the people here this evening, everybody's got a thought going through their head immediately about how they might help someone do that. Well, then help. You know, I'll be honest with you. I'm talking to people in lots of different organizations, and they're friends of mine. And I'm not necessarily doing that as the company that I work for. You know, that's out of hours, or that's just because I want to lend a hand. You know, so I think that there's an onus on us as agilists. I mean, I'm with Renee, and I know that that's the thread that runs through with the three of us. We got into this whole game because we always believed about the humans in technology, and then it became the humans in whatever we did, and it's about the people. It's still about the people. Underlying to all organizations, at the heart of it, at the heart of Agile, is people. And if we can't enable and help people, then what are we doing?
So, John, you've got an interesting point there.
Thanks, Craig. Yes, I was thinking that one thing that I've come across is a lot of different patterns that have come out of this, something that we haven't seen in the use of remote working before. So one of my colleagues has his work is where he has everyone in his team constantly on Zoom all of the time, so the whole day. And what he does is he says to them, look, it's not about making sure that you're sitting at your desk working. In fact, he would often go to them and say, look, guys, I want you to, I have seen you've spent too much time at your desk. You need to be away and have coffee and take breaks and do stuff. But what it does do is that it means if you have a question on something or you're working with an issue and you can see who's around, you can say, hey, Dave, what do you think about you know, the service contract that we're struggling with, have you got any information on that? I mean, I can't find the source of that. He's found it really, really effective. Now, I was thinking that each of those different ways of doing things would have some pluses and minuses. And if we're able to build up some sort of a pattern book and then evaluate which ones are more effective, then that might be one way of coming out of this stronger than we came in.
Yeah, I think there's certainly the opportunity to, as a agile community, to start collecting data. You sort of mentioned, collecting metrics, for comparison. And so one of the things is that, and it comes back to that earlier point, if we would like to keep some of these things the same, now's the time to collect that data to actually take that back to leadership to say, actually, this is something that did work.
So if you can find some way of ending up with a more energized, more effective team, just because they have that they feel that the co-workers are closer to them than perhaps some of the other patterns, then that might be something that as a community we could put it out there as options for people to consider.
Yeah, Michael's tuned in, but he can't talk at the moment. But he said that he went, and I was talking to him earlier, he went back into the office today and he said it was nice to talk to people face to face. You know, he went back in for the flu shot that they were giving away but stayed in the office. And so it was a nice change, but there was about 20 people around the office. I want to bring Patrick in. Patrick, yeah. You've got an interesting comment there.
Yeah, what I've typed in is that maybe I guess the crisis is possibly sending us a message to slow down and reflect on what really matters. It's at this point, it's no longer quote unquote business as usual. And I guess maybe it might be the time to take a step back and have a look at how we do things, not just as a business or, you know, as consultants or something like that, but, you know, as human beings, I guess. Easier said than done, but
absolutely. And Wei Yin was also putting a thumbs up to that as well.
Yeah, I hope that will happen. I fear it will not, but I hope that will happen.
Fingers crossed, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not really seeing a slowdown at the moment. I worry what might occur in the months to come, but that will be more for other reasons, I think. But, yeah, it would be nice. And so, again, I think that comes back to my point that I was trying to raise before is, As the agile coaches and guides, how can we bring it back to the sustainability principle of agility, right, to make sure that's actually occurring, and bring it back to the humanity that Renee mentioned as well.
I agree with that, and again, some of the people I've been talking to around that, you know, I think we've even said it tonight. When we get out the other side of this, so what I'm asking them is, okay, how about we plan that we're not getting out the other side of this, and this is the new norm. What are we going to do? How are we going to make this better? How do we actually make this so that it's sustainable for our people? Because at the moment, some of the organizations have got to focus on going, oh, well, it's okay if we burn. It's okay if people, you know, are working a bit extra or whatever that may be till we get there. But what if we don't get there when they think we're going to get there? What happens then? So it's time to start thinking about planning that right now so that when we actually do come out of this, that we have a sustainable model.
Yeah, I'm wondering, Renee. We've had a lot of discussions in the past, and need to have some more going forward about the we talk a lot about teal organisations, but more importantly, I guess about green organisations. If you follow the sort of the work there around reinventing organisations from Lulu, I'm just wondering. Does this, in your mind, help us perhaps help organisations move up that tree from where they are now?
I think it depends on how long this goes for. So if organisations, to Tony's point, feel like they can bounce back and in the next few months everything will be returning to normal, I think that may be out of our reach. But the longer it prolongs, the more I think people will take a step back and really think more broadly about the world and everything that's going on and start to open themselves out for other options.
Do you think this is actually forced organisations that are at that, let's just say, orange level to actually jump up a rung out of necessity?
I think there's a hedge bet on that is a possibility, yes. So. Yeah.
I think it's a huge bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, this is the thing. I think to the point earlier around running experiments inside of your team and sort of recording that, there's also huge corporate hedge bets going on at the moment where organisations are not just doing the usual thing of one strategy, but they're actually picking multiple strategies and executing with the anticipation that the world is going to go down one of those paths.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to bring Wei Yin in again. Wei Yin?
I was just typing saying that to Tony's point, that was one of the things that I've chatted with a friend about today, about what would happen, what would be the business as usual be going back after this crisis, because currently we are a lot of us are working from home just because it's a government mandated kind of isolation. However, my personal point of view is looking at potentially business may assess it as whether do they actually need to have all those people in the office daily? What would be the potential positive impact of having people choose to have a flexible work day and work from home? Because then that could potentially cut down on the business itself having a big real estate as in office space that they need to cater for everyone. But then we thought of, okay, right now, certain companies are not liable for their staff's health and safety in terms of providing a proper workspace, a desk, and you know, ergonomic chairs and stuff like that. But if a business then choose to say that, look, right now, because of this organizational change or however they want to term it, if you want to work from home, you can work from home. However, does this mean then the business are then liable for the health and safety of their workers in terms of providing ergonomic chairs, desks, and you know, proper monitor and what have you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the fact of the matter is a lot of people are working from that, you know, that very basic kitchen table because there's nowhere else to work from.
I've seen someone working from an ironing board.
Yeah, there you go.
Do not.
And organisations are happy to waive that at the moment because they're actually saying to themselves, we're going to be out of this shortly. And it's acceptable because this is you know, not long-term and we can get there. But I think it's exactly back to that point where, is they need to start asking the question, what if now? And, you know, you've got to look at this is not new. So there are plenty of organisations. So take the call centres and the contact centres. They've been doing this for a long time. I have friends who haven't been into an office forever. They work from home and they're connected up and they put their headset on and they get their contact centre calls in their ears and they're working. They have their team meetings online. This is, you know, they sort of said, we've got this. This is just new, right? Take it from a 16-year-old's point of view, right? So I said to my son about this social distancing and having to work from home, and he just looked at me and went, yeah, I do that already. My generation's got this. It's you guys that's got to figure it out.
Yeah, it's a great point. I mean, even in the organisation that I work in, people like myself are just used to working in different workplaces, working from home, being in any office, but other people in my organisation who are used to always going into the office are really struggling with it. So even within organisations, there's differing levels, and that's all part of the experiment. But yeah, you hit the nail on the head, Tony. Is that I think for people in the younger set, they're just like, well, wouldn't that be the way you're working anyway? And maybe that's the change that it starts to force.
I mean, the statistic that I've seen, and I can't recall the source of it, was there's an expectation that there'll be a 30% increase in the number of policies that will be able to support working from home after this change. So I think definitely it's going to make it more accessible and more normal, and organisations, yes, to your point, would need to incorporate options to be able to better support that as well. I think the scarier downside is you may find organisations will see this as an opportunity to significantly reduce its real estate costs. And then, you know, your 8-for-10 open office environment shrinks down to 4-for-10, for example. So 4 desks for every 10 people. I think that's a real reality that could happen coming out of this.
Yeah,
absolutely. I think so too. But I am enjoying the fact that I can wear a T-shirt, shorts and no shoes and haven't worn any for about 3 weeks now, so that's pretty good.
And you've got no underwear on anyway, so.
Hey, you can only see my shirt. And as I said, the razor tends to touch us very lightly while we're on extended leave. Seen some beards on people they shouldn't have. Nobody's doing it, yeah.
Lucky awesome. You have a blurry webcam there, Tony. Look, I'm conscious of the time.
I had to do my own haircuts, by the way, guys. I did a haircut both of my kids with my dog's grooming.
I wasn't going to mention it, but anyway.
Look, This has been a great conversation, and I don't think we've scratched the surface, but hopefully there's a few things there for folks to think about. So I'm just wondering, as a sort of last thought, Tony, Renee, what are your hopes and wishes as we continue to move through this for the Agile community and for our organisations who are on their Agile journey? Tony?
Look, I think for me, I hope the Agile community comes together and becomes stronger out of this and actually a lot closer. You know, there's been a lot of, in the Agile community, there's always been a little bit of, how should we say, you're better than I am and I'm better than you. And I think, you know, what I'd like to see is the community come together as a strong community and use that paradigm to actually help organisations to get stronger. Organisationally, I would like to see organisations actually think about how they're actually designing themselves for the future, because for me, even if we get outside of this particular thing that's happened to us, this is a real shot across the bows that this could happen again at any time. And so, you know, it may not just be this one.
Yeah, Renee?
I think my closing statement would be, with disruption comes opportunity. So be on the lookout for an opportunistic mechanism to really help bring your teams and your business together to work more effectively utilising Agile.
Yeah, and I think I'll sort of on the back of that, this is an opportunity for us to look for the lean opportunities. It's an opportunity for us to look for the human interaction opportunities. It's an opportunity for tooling that you may not have been able to necessarily get across before. And it's an opportunity to perhaps have the conversations or start to do some of the continuous improvement opportunities that perhaps you couldn't have when you're in the office, just out of necessity.
Yeah. And, Michael, you're right. It is an opportunity for you to jump into a Brisbane meetup as well.
Yeah, so I guess in order to finish up the podcast, if people want to hear more from you, Tony, where do they find you?
You can find me, Tony, at theagilerevolution.com.
Renee at theagilerevolution.com.
Of course, I'm Craig at theagilerevolution.com, and you can find us on Twitter as well, at theagilepodcast. So follow us there for all the latest. So I guess we just need a big Agile Brisbane send-off. So we normally end the podcast by saying Viva la Revolution. So if I click the button here, or if you can help me there, John, to click the button to unmute everybody. Because I just pressed the wrong button entirely.
I got them.
One job, dude. One job.
So on the count of three, we're going to do a big Viva la Revolution, okay? One, two, three.
Viva la revolution.
I think we could do better than that. All right. See my hands? I'm going to count it off. Ready? One, two, three.
Viva la revolution.
See, the old radio thing always works.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. We hope it was good. We hope you enjoyed.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for being part of the podcast.